Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I was hoping that in a moment we would be speaking with author John Feinstein. His latest book, Moment of Glory, The Year Underdogs Ruled Golf. And we're still trying to get him on the air, or get him on the horn. So in the meantime, let me tell you, we want to talk about, with John, we want to talk about Tiger Woods. Tiger is at the Memorial Tournament right now, and no one could be welcoming him with open arms more than the Memorial Tournament organizers. But apparently the fans are being pretty kind to him, too. For one thing, he made the cut. So apparently fans are nicer to him when he makes the cut than when he doesn't, as in Charlotte, North Carolina the other week. So Tiger is a phenomenon that just from reading John's latest book goes way beyond what just about anybody, and certainly any sports figure, ever has done. He is golf. When it comes to the economics of golf, the finances of golf, putting golf tournaments on, if Tiger doesn't show up, you don't have much of a tournament. There apparently is the Tiger tournaments and then the non-Tiger tournaments, and you definitely want to be going to the Tiger tournaments if you want to have more fun, see more people, certainly you want to be throwing those tournaments if you want to make more money. In the Columbus Dispatch, front page today, front page news on the Columbus Dispatch, Tiger Woods. Kathy Lynn Gray wrote a story about the fact that Central Ohio still loves Tiger Woods, the golfer. But as far as the man goes, they're not as impressed. And the question is how do you separate the man from the golfer? That's kind of what I wanted to talk to John Feinstein about, if we can get him on the air. But if we can't, we can still talk about Tiger. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. That's 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think about Tiger showing up? Are you glad for the sake of the Central Ohio economy that he's there? Because it certainly makes a difference. When he shut down for the year in 2008 for that ACL surgery, CBS reported a 48% drop in ratings for its coverage of the 2008 AT&T National, which he normally hosts and plays in. ABC reported a 14.6% drop in its ratings for the 2008 British Open, despite the drama that year provided by Greg Norman. I remember that. That's an amazing drop-off. By any account, Tiger transcends just the hardcore golf fan world. He is he's part of, you know, of course, the gossip pages, and he was before his career, or not, I shouldn't say his career, but his reputation did a nosedive after the revelation of his several philandering experiences. He's now in the middle, or is going to be getting a divorce from his wife, or his wife's divorcing him, I should say. It doesn't get much better ever since the revelations last winter, but he did return to the game. He had to return to the game. Too many things depend on it. I called him. I was going to ask John about how the game has come to depend on just one man for so much sports, for so much. If John Feinstein can join us, maybe he can answer that question. But in the meantime, what do you think? 614-292-8513, or you can email us on allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. I know that my associate producer, Amy Jurevich, is ready, willing, and able to take your messages on Facebook and then forward them to me. I wonder how fans separate their disapproval of his private life from their admiration for his game. I do. I've always been a big Tiger fan. He's amazing. There's nothing else like him. There never has been anything like him. Even when you go back and compare him to the greats of yesteryear, the game was different back then. He's compared to Babe Ruth in terms of the sport's dependence on him for profit. Michael Jordan, but in my opinion, Jordan really can't hold a candle to Tiger's profitability. I don't know if that has as much to do with the fact that, you know, it's basketball versus golf or not. But there is no competition in my book, and I'm not a super fan of either. Well, I'm actually a pretty good golf fan. I play golf. So how do you separate your disapproval of his private life from your admiration for his game? Give me a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.com. The book by John Feinstein. I'm sure this is just a technical glitch, so no offense to John Feinstein. The book, I started reading it last night. I started looking for references to Tiger Woods in the book, but it would, every time I started to do that, I would end up reading four or five pages on, because it's very well done. Of course, John Feinstein, he's a New York Times bestselling author. There's no surprise there. He's a wonderful writer. He's written a gazillion books. The book is called Moment of Glory, The Year Underdogs Ruled Golf. And guess why they ruled golf? It's because Tiger Woods wasn't around. He was there in body and mind, but his swing was shot that year in 2003. It takes place in 2003, and he changed up his swing and had to work on it for the whole year, and he was pretty much out to lunch in terms of winning, and that gave some underdogs a chance to do that. Let's talk to Kurt right now. Kurt, you want to talk about athletes in general?
Well, my comment was, and he touched on this a little bit, was that you know, you see this in several different sports. You mentioned Mike Tyson. You see it a little bit with LeBron James. And, you know, to an extent, a lot of sports need a villain, too. And I'm not sure if Tiger's going to become, you know, the villain of golf. But it's just a certain athletes, people want to just tune in to see who you don't even really follow the sport otherwise. Tune in to see that athlete and see how they do against, you know, the other athletes in that sport, I guess. It draws an audience that the sport wouldn't normally draw. So I think you see with Tiger, I think you see, and you saw this with Michael Jordan in basketball, Mike Tyson in boxing, you see this, you know, certain athletes drawing fans to the sport who otherwise wouldn't watch it. And I think, you know, Mike Tyson might be a good comparison here. It's where Tiger's reputation might be going, where Mike Tyson didn't really have a bad reputation or a good reputation at first. Turned out he had a very bad reputation towards the end, but people still tuned in.
Well, I was going to say Tyson was tawdry, but, you know, really, Tiger Woods is tawdry too.
Yeah.
It's not a function of that, apparently. So he's just so great. Do you think it'll always be like that? Or if he start, you know, there was that year, 2003, which is kind of the cornerstone of John Feinstein's new book, Moment of Glory, that year when his swing was off and these underdogs came to the fore, no pun intended.
Right.
Do you think if that were to continue for many years, if he just did a gradual down slide, or do you think he'll always be like a Jack Nicklaus?
No, you have to. I mean, again, look at Mike Tyson. You know, when his boxing career, when he started to get beaten, his boxing career really went downhill. You know, at a certain point, you know, it was really interesting to watch to see, you know, if he could come back. But then once it was clear that he couldn't come back, then people just stopped watching him. And I think that's going to be the case with any of these athletes, with Tiger Woods or, you know, let's say LeBron James were to, you know, get some injury that would prevent him from mm-hmm. performing at the high level he performed at, you know, at a certain point, then it just stops becoming interesting to watch. But, you know, bumps in the road are, you know, just as interesting to watch as when the athlete is doing well. I mean, when the athlete gets beat, when that's unexpected, you know, that's really big news then. So.
Well, like I said, it's a cornerstone of Feinstein's new book, and he consistently refers back to, you know, what they were thinking about Tiger at that moment. What would Tiger do? You know, how did Tiger respond when I beat him on that green? How did he respond when he missed that putt? And it's throughout the book. So it's sort of like an in base relief of Tiger, the book is written, and it's very interesting. Kurt, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye. So now, Ann, you're on the air. You want to talk about how I feel about Tiger? Am I talking to myself?
No.
Okay.
Hi.
About how you feel about Tiger.
Yeah. How do I go about distinguishing between, or how do I separate the feelings I have for him as an athlete versus his private life? And I think that's what we have to do all the time with our heroes. I mean, they're constantly falling from grace, whether it's appreciating Bill Clinton for his ability as an amazing president and not, you know, despising him or what he put Hillary through, or any of our heroes, any of our athletes. It's like we have kind of put put them up on a pedestal as a role model because they're in the public eye. And I think that's kind of unfair. I mean, at the same time, I don't think it's okay to just excuse all of the affairs and that kind of thing. But you have to look at why Tiger rose to fame. It's because of his amazing ability and not because of his personal life. And so then to kind of use that against him now is unfortunate.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I'm thinking that the function of his fame, though, or his personal life became a function of his fame. He couldn't have done what he did if he hadn't been so brilliant.
Well, and don't you think that's true, though, for all of, again, those heroes that are in the public eye,
right.
Those, you know, those great athletes, you know, rock stars, anybody
right.
who, you know, has a following, has groupies, what have mm-hmm. you, they're going to have many more opportunities to stray from, you know, straight and narrow path. So.
Right. Should we all have so many opportunities, how would the rest of us fare?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. All righty. Well, Anne, thanks for talking to me.
And thanks for your conversation today.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to move on to Kappa. And hopefully, John Feinstein, maybe the next time we try to book him, we'll get a whole hour with him in just 20 minutes. So stay with us. We're going to be talking about Kappa's 40th anniversary of their summer film series in a few minutes on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
John Waters describes himself as a cult filmmaker whose core audience consists of minorities who can't even fit in with their own minorities. Waters is best known for his films Pink Flamingos and Hairspray. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with him about his new book, Role Models, the stories of people who have inspired him, from Johnny Mathis to pornographers. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. It's 70 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19 this morning. Cloudy skies today with a chance of showers and thunderstorms throughout the day, a high of 82. A few clouds tonight, also a chance of rain tonight, maybe a thunderstorm as well, a low of 62 degrees. Some sunshine for Friday. There is a slight chance of rain for Friday as well, otherwise a high of 82. And All Sides with Ann Fisher will be broadcasting live from the Columbus Arts Festival tomorrow from 10 until noon. You can stop by and visit the show and visit the WOSU booth. Stop by and hear a live broadcast of All Sides with Ann Fisher from the Columbus Arts Festival. That's tomorrow from 10 a.m. until noon. Visit WOSU.org for more information. And WOSU Public Media and the Greater Columbus Arts Council present the 2010 Columbus Arts Festival. It's June 4th, 5th, and 6th in the Discovery District. Visit gcac.org for more information about the festival. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher, not to be confused with Hollywood. Hooray for Hollywood, played by Clark Wilson, organist Clark Wilson. He will be with us toward the end of the hour. We're talking about, as I mentioned earlier, Kappa's 40th anniversary summer movie series this year. Joining us today to talk about that and how it has developed over the years, what it means to the community, and what's coming up this season, Rich Corsi, Director of Programming for the Kappa series. Welcome, Rich.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And on the phone, Lance Carwile. He's a consultant to Kappa for the film series. Lance, thanks for joining us.
Good to be there.
I wonder, 40 years, that's a long time. I had no idea. Now, of course, I've lived here 20 years, so maybe it's showing my age. But is the oldest? Is 40 years, it's the oldest, but is it particularly long, or have others cropped up right behind it in the United States? Rich?
I'm not aware of any film series that are close to the 40 years that we have going. There are other folks in different cities that have series, but nothing like a 40-year series.
Now, how did this happen?
Well, it started back in 1970, the first year that after the theater was saved, they produced a movie series, I think, just to have some activity in the actual theater, and they showed four films. And then the next year they showed some more films and more films, and then it just kind of led up to this 40 years later. This year we're up to 22 titles and a couple cartoon capers, so people still want it. So
when did it become sort of a phenomenon? When did it become a destination activity for people where they're looking forward to seeing what CAP is going to have on this year?
Well, I mean, probably back, you know, in the early 80s is when it really started to take off. And, you know, throughout the whole series, we've always kept it very, very affordable. Even today, you can get a ticket as cheap as $2.50, and there's not much you can do for $2.50 anymore.
No, there's not. And you can – are the tours free?
Yes. We have 3 dates that are scheduled tours. You can go to our website, and they've got the dates. It's June 12th, June 26th, and July 10th. And it's an actual full tour of the theater, and it's just an awesome experience. You can go there. You do need to reserve a space. It's free of charge, but we have a limited amount of space. But it's a great thing. You do the tour, and then you finish with that, and you go in and watch the movie. And
but first you listen, of course, to Clark Wilson play.
Oh, yeah. Clark is awesome. He's been there the same amount of time that I've been at Kappa, for 19 years now. So we came on to Kappa together, and he's been great every year.
Lance, how do you all decide what films to show in the first place?
Well, it's kind of a combination of one thing, what's available, what's been popular in the past. And we do have some standbys that we like to bring back every few years. And also, we listen to requests from various people who, you know, just send in suggestions to Kappa, or even just mention something to our in the lobby to our ushers, and they pass those suggestions along to us. We try to vary the series so that it's a combination not only of old favorites, but also a few movies that somehow we've missed out putting on the schedule before. So try to get a little bit of something for everyone.
I'm just guessing, but is it happened one night, one of those regulars?
Yes, it is. The Frank Capra comedies, a number of the romantic comedies, it happened one night, or a lot of the Cary Grant films. Cary Grant's always been a very big draw, and the Frank Capra comedies and Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert, their films have done well for us in the past.
You know, it happened one night. Let's listen to a bit from that right now.
You know, I had you pegged right from the jump. Just a spoiled brat of a rich father. The only way you get anything is to buy it, isn't it? You're in a jam, and all you can think of is your money. It never fails, does it? Ever hear of the word humility? No, you wouldn't. I guess it never occurred to you to just say, please, mister, I'm in trouble. Will you help me? No, let it bring you down off your high horse for a minute. Well, let me tell you something. Maybe it'll take a load off your mind. You don't have to worry about me. I'm not interested in your money or your problem. You, King Wesley, your father, you're all a lot of hooey to me.
That is not hooey, though. That is a great monologue by Clark Gable. It's a great film. One of the things I love about that era, though, is the kind of the wordiness, the conversations they have with each other. And you can listen to it. That was Clark talking to his co-star, help me.
Claudette Colbert.
She's obviously a spoiled brat of a rich father. And she wants him to help her get back to New York. Without anybody seeing her. So how does that become of such a favorite?
Well, I think there's some, it's not just the personalities of the actors, but there's something about some movies, and It Happened One Night is one of them, that when you're in the theater with a group of people, the shared experience of being able to laugh at a comedy like that. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of little subtle touches sometimes in the things that maybe you might not catch if you're just watching it at home on TV. But being there with the audience and just the chemistry, the characters, It Happened One Night is one where all the elements seem to come through. And that was the first probably big picture hit for Columbia Pictures. It helped put them on the map back in 1934.
It's nice enough watching it on television in black and white, but I haven't seen it on the big screen ever. That's got to be something. Rich?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing when folks come to the theater to see a movie. It's almost as though you're going to a concert or a production. I mean, you're greeted by the ushers at the front door. You go in. Clark Wilson, the organist, plays 30 minutes prior. We once in a while have some trailers, things like that. At intermission, Clark is playing. And then after the performance, Clark is playing. So it's almost as though you're going to a theatrical production, not just a movie.
Even a movie like It Happened to a Night, that'll attract all ages. I mean, I certainly know that I'm going to try to get my 14-year-old to go because he's not going to sit down with me in the living room and watch it on television. But, you know, going and seeing it together, I think he could get it more that way.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of families that come to a lot of the movies. One of the big reasons with the big musicals like Singing in the Rain and things like that, we show them specifically on the weekends. And you get the grandkids, the parents, and the grandparents all coming as a family. And there's just nothing better than seeing families come to the theater for that.
And laughing together and having fun. I think this is the first, it's a premiere, Pretty Woman.
Yeah, it's the 20th anniversary of Pretty Woman, and a couple years ago we started a Chick Flick Fridays, and we've shown some different movies, and this was a no-brainer, especially with the 20th anniversary. We get a lot of requests, and as Lance mentioned, we do take a lot of calls, emails, suggestions from patrons. I mean, we want to show the movies that patrons want to see.
I used to think, Lance, that typically it was more of a vintage type thing. I guess Pretty Woman is basically vintage at this point in the 20-year anniversary. But it's not necessarily. I mean, you'll show anything.
Well, we have to. That's one thing we have to kind of keep track of the audience taste through the years. And just if you look, Pretty Woman is to the series this year what All About Eve would have been to the series in 1970,
okay,
if we had had it on that particular series. We had it a few years later, but where it's 20 years, where it has become a favorite, and so the library that we have to choose from for the series just keeps growing and growing, and we try to put a little bit of films from every year in there. But we have to kind of try to make it relevant to all our audiences and not neglect the core audience that made the series so successful over the years.
Let's hear a cut from Pretty Woman now because they have a lot of fun dialogue in that movie.
Can I call you Eddie?
Not if you expect me to answer.
I would have stayed for $2,000.
I would have paid $4,000. I'll see you tonight.
Baby, I'm going to treat you so nice, you're never going to want to let me go.
$3,000 for 6 days. And Vivian, I will let you go.
But I'm here now. $3,000!
Yeah, I could use that $3,000 too. That is, of course, Vivian. She is a prostitute. The prostitute with the heart of gold or something like the hooker with the heart of gold or something like that. She's been called in a gigantic bathtub in a penthouse apartment at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. And he's a billionaire or something like that hires her to hang out with him for a week while he socializes and does business in Hollywood or in Los Angeles. So Pretty Woman. Did you get a lot of calls for that, Lance?
Well, it's kind of based on the success of some of the other films we've had. Pretty Woman was one that would have been requested, but when we've had things like When Harry Met Sally that have done very well in the past, we kind of figure that another film that it's along those lines, that era, and has that romantic but tart dialogue would work out. And so, Pretty Woman did come up in some of the suggestions, and as Rich mentioned, it was a no-brainer.
You know, another thing about the films that I love to see, they're older films, but there's no cuts in them. There's no, they're not edited for length. They're not edited for content. It's the whole film, and you don't see that anymore on television.
That's true. It's we've got a wide variety of content on the films we have in the series. We make sure that the films are identified, like Pretty Woman, may not be certainly not suitable for small children.
Right.
But the other films, though, that it pretty much fit into a family type mode.
Carousel was on in the first lineup, and it's on this time as well. Is that on purpose?
Yeah, we specifically put Carousel on the series because it was one of the first four films that was shown at the actual theater in 1970.
Has it been on before, though, since then?
1989. It's been 21 years since we've had it.
Yeah.
Now, it feels like after 40 years you would have had everything on. So how do you – I was told that sometimes one of the functions is whether or not you can even get your hands on the film in the first place. What does that take?
Well, that all varies on the availability of print. Now, we do some films on a digital basis now where the 35-millimeter prints are not in service, and we have a really nice digital presentation. Other films, the rights, for example, The Music Man was a film that for several years the rights reverted back to the Meredith Wilson estate, and the film was not made available theatrically. And then probably about 15 years ago when we had it the first time, then the rights cleared up. It's a matter of being kind of in the right place at the right time and having prints and the rights available to the film at that time.
How do you do that? I mean, do you just have connections out there that you keep in constant contact with? Because I know you start planning this sometime in December.
Mm-hmm. I make a lot of phone calls and probably annoy a lot of people. But no, we do that, and I think Rich, you know, kind of pulls the office, pulls together the suggestions that have been submitted to people, and we start looking around and seeing what's going on. We pay attention to films that may have been revived in film festivals in New York City and see if we can get a hold of those prints. The Wolfman, for example, it's a series premiere, and it's going to be a virtually new print that was made and exhibited in New York last fall.
If you'd like to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. We're talking about the 40th anniversary presentation of the Kappa Film Series down at the Ohio Theater. You can learn more about that. Go to WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have a link for you to that. You can go to email at allsides@WOSU.org if you have a question or comment, and we have some of those right now that we'll get to. This one's from Connie. Would love to see Citizen Kane on the big screen. Could I see this one year?
Well, we've shown that a number of times, and it's probably getting about the time ready for it to come back in what I call the rotation. We try not to have the films much more than every 5 or 7 years, but Citizen Kane is a perennial, and we've had it at least, I think, 2 or 3 times, and it's one to bring back, definitely. Looks great on the big screen.
It Happened One Night, Citizen Kane, both of them are black and white. Does that have anything to do with it? That it's just such a treat to see those movies on a big screen.
Well, I think the presentation, and in the case of things like Citizen Kane and It Happened One Night, over the years, the distributors, because those are such major titles, have made sure to try to do restorations and to make sure that the prints that are available are in top condition.
What are some other all-time favorites?
Well, let's see. Singing the Rain is probably one of the biggest of the musicals we have. The Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals are pretty big. Rich, jump in here. You probably know some of the attendance figures better than I do.
Sure. I mean, Gone with the Wind has always been a big one. A few years ago, we showed Raiders of the Lost Ark. We ended up having over 8,000 people that weekend. It was crazy.
Sound of Music's a perennial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that in this? No, we got 20.
It has to. We're going to rest it another couple of years.
Okay.
And then we'll make sure. But what we do each year is we ask them, are you going to make another new print or something like that to make sure that if they say, oh, we're making a new print for use next year, well, that kind of moves it ahead.
Okay. Because you want to be first in line for that.
Yes.
614-292-8513. And Charlie, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Question and two comments. One is some movies that you'd like to get but you can't, haven't been able to get a hold of. What would it be? I wanted to also say I like the silent films you have. Really enjoy those. And recommended would be Shop Around the Corner.
Oh, yeah. Shop Around the Corner. Thanks for your call, Charlie.
That's a great romantic comedy that would be with James Stewart and Margaret Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Around 1940.
So any films that you haven't been able to get that you want?
Lance, do you want to speak about Patton this year?
Well, Patton was one that one of the things that when we're doing the digital some of the digital presentations is that a film like Patton or, in fact, most of the 20th Century Fox titles that we have on the schedule this year, like Patton, and All About Eve, The Omen, and Carousel were ones that were not readily available to us because that particular company was not making 35 millimeter prints available to situations like ours. So we've been able to get those films. Patton, I mean, we've seen be like a no-brainer. It's as old as the movie series, but it's the first time it's ever been part of the series. And we'll have a really beautiful presentation of it.
614-292-8513. And Chris, you're on the air. You were an usher.
Yeah, years ago when I was about 12 years old, I had a piano teacher, and her son was one of the people that helped get the movie series started. His name was Don, and I don't remember the last name.
Is it McDowell?
McDowell. Yes, that's it. McDowell. Right. Yeah, it was quite an interesting family, and I know that he worked a lot down there and kept things going for a long time.
What movies were showing that year?
Oh, I really can't remember. Just a lot of, I think I remember, you know, you mentioned earlier Cary Grant. There was I've seen those down there. Just all sorts of older movies. In talking about movies, I would like to see maybe at some point some of the, I know that Fred Astaire was down there quite a bit, some mm-hmm. of his movies. And I would find it interesting to see the black and white film that was, it had to do with a man that had poison. And he had like 24 hours to live or
the
something.
The movie, I think, DOA with Edmund O'Brien from 1949.
And Dennis Quaid, there was a remake with him in it.
That's right.
Not about 15 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I found it very, very interesting to, help Usher. And it was quite, you were wanting to be allowed to Usher because it was, they opened it up to a lot of their piano students and stuff. And it was... It was quite the thing to do, actually.
Well, thanks for your call, Chris.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care. How do you get a gig ushering there?
You can just call Kappa at 469-1045, and they'll pass you through on to the volunteer person there.
Okay.
It's great.
You can go to our website, too, at WOSU.org/allsides, and you can go to allsides at WOSU.org to email us, and 614-292-8513 to call us and talk to Rich Corsi. And Lance Carwell, they're the guys that help pick out the movies for the Kappa Summer Movie Series. We'll talk more about the lineup and the 40th anniversary of the series, and we will meet the organist Clark Wilson when we return on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. See a new lineup of public affairs programming on Friday nights from WOSU TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week, followed by Columbus on the Record at 8:30. Continuing at 9 is the McLaughlin Group, and at 9:30, PBS presents Need to Know, a new program with an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Watch the new public affairs lineup every Friday night on WOSU TV. And All Sides with Ann Fisher will be broadcasting live from the Columbus Arts Festival tomorrow from 10 a.m. until noon. Stop by and visit the show and visit the WOSU booth. That's All Sides with Ann Fisher live at the Columbus Arts Festival tomorrow from 10 until noon. For more information, visit WOSU.org. And for more information about the festival, visit GCAC.org, the Greater Columbus Arts Council. And it's currently 70 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies with rain showers and thunderstorms today, a high of 82. Clouds tonight with a chance of rain and a low of 62 degrees. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Man, do I love that music. That is Moonlight on the Ganges. It's played by Clark Wilson. And Clark, you're with us right now.
I'm with you.
Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Love the organ. I've always loved it. It really does get you in the mood for almost anything, probably. You've been playing the organ for the series for about 19 years, Rich said.
That's about right, yes. Cough what? Choke.
Well, I've been, a fan of it for about the same time, cough choke. What is, I guess, the most exciting thing for me to hear is when you play along with the silent movies.
Oh, right. That's a lot of fun. It's a good fun thing to do. It uses the other side of your brain, mm-hmm. aside from the usual solo work on the organ, and to go back to the time when the theater was new and the organs were being installed in the movie palaces for doing just that thing, accompanying a silent film. That, as I say, is good fun to do, and it's just a different experience.
It's a different experience to listen to. We have an email now from Debbie who wants to talk about that a little bit. Kappa's movie series has been so important to me. It is the reason I am a movie fan. Wow.
Wow.
The Ohio Theater is the first place I saw Clark Gable, my all-time favorite, and Buster Keaton. You can't get any better than Clark Wilson accompanying a Buster Keaton silent film. I agree, Debbie. Anyone who thinks they have movies on DVD and don't need to see the film in a theater has no idea the extraordinary experience this series in the Ohio Theater is. I look forward to it every year. Now, there's one thing about that theater. It was built for movies, and was it built for the organ, though?
Well, yes, it actually was. The organ was a big part of the opening ceremonies, and for a number of years after that, no picture palace, particularly something the size of the Ohio, was considered complete in the 20s, and even sometimes into the early 30s, without having a big pipe organ like that. The Ohio, in particular, had an orchestra and also the organ, as we still hear it today, when it opened in 1928, and the organ was used for sing-alongs and overtures and playing the house in somewhat like we do now, but shorter back then. Spotlight solos and things, and Roger Garrett was probably the best known of those organists. After the silent era was over and they weren't using the organ to play the pictures anymore, Roger was there from around, 1932 to 1942, and he was hired for 2 weeks. And wound up staying for 10 years playing sing-alongs and spotlight solos. He was so popular. So the legacy goes back a long way with that organ.
I remember seeing a Buster Keaton movie there one time during the series, and you're doing the sing-along during that. It was one of the things that you did. I can't remember if it was at the beginning or at the end.
Okay. I've got some of Roger's actual song slides. And what we would have used would have been some of those, and recreating some of the things that that he did at the big farewell performance back in 1969, when the theater was supposed to be torn down, and thank goodness wasn't.
We've got some calls now. Let's take one of those. Tom, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I love your show.
Thank you.
I have too many suggestions, but. Anything W.C. Fields, anything Mae West, Cleopatra comes to mind, The Color Purple, and I'll shut up.
Okay. The Color Purple. Thanks, Tom, for your call.
Well, I have one more question. What's the thing that you can book for free once with the tour? When is that?
The tours this year will be June 12th, June 26th, and July 10th.
Great.
And you can just go to the website, and they'll have the information on how to sign up. And we'd love to have you come down.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Got another call. Julia, you're on the air. You have a suggestion.
Yes, I do. I was wondering about Long, Long, Long Trailer with Lucille Ball and also The Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Okay.
Well, Long, Long Trailer has not been on the series, but it is something to consider, certainly.
Yeah.
Lucille Ball, of course, is a lot of favorite.
Right.
Speak for people.
Right. Well, sometimes my granddaughter doesn't care to go down there because she doesn't see them as current. But I think that movie, anyone of any age could find a lot of good laughs in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was good. And also, do you ever have, the silent movies and the organ... the organ master accompanying it, I think.
Yeah, Well, we actually have Clark Wilson on the air with us right now. Julia, and he has been doing that for 19 years. So just drop by and check out the. Now, Clark, you played before every film as well.
I play a half hour before each film and then the 15-minute intermission and play the house out at the end. And then this year we will be doing two back-to-back Keaton features for The Silence on that Thursday and Friday.
I think I saw Keaton there during the series a few years ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And how do you where do you get the music from to do it? How do you know what to play with the film?
Well, that's one of those things that you learn over the years. But most of the pictures that came with scores, and quite a few of them did, either scores or cue sheets that suggested what to play, most of those sheets are gone now. There are a few still around. But when you do a picture, when you set up accompaniment for a picture, you really delve into your own bag of tricks and your own extensive music library for titles and suggestions of what to do. I go through and view a picture, and it's great because we're in this DVD age now. You can do that and see what's coming, and then and decide what themes to use and what will work well in heightening situations. And it's a different process if it's a comedy versus a great big feature, an epic feature like Wings or something like that.
Now, I see there's three Buster Keaton movies. One of them is a silent film and the other two aren't. Is that right, Rich? Or are they all three silent?
The two, we have two of the Buster Keaton films, and it basically Clark is going to be playing for both of those in one evening.
Okay.
You know, they're two shorter features, each of them a little bit under an hour. So.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I was just reading this. Yeah, you got Sherlock Jr. from 1924 and Seven Chances from 1925.
Correct.
Right.
Let's take another call now. Jerry, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning. Great show. Two of the best movies I've ever seen. Two of my favorites are down at the Ohio Theater with Mr. Roberts, with Henry Fonda. What a cast. Jack Lemmon, Bill Powell, and Jimmy Cagney. And the other was,
Big Sleep, I think, was it?
Pardon?
The Big Sleep.
How'd you know?
Well, because my screener. I'm not. I don't have ESP.
Okay.
I have to.
Yeah, The Big Sleep. The best mystery movie I've ever seen. And I first saw it in 46. I can't tell you how many times I've seen it since. But I'd like to ask if you plan to show Kirk Douglas in Paths of Glory or Henry Fonda in another great cast in 12 Angry Men, or maybe you've shown them and
well,
I missed
12
them.
Angry Men was one that we ran just a couple of years ago.
Well, I missed it.
And
what about Paths of Glory?
Paths of Glory, we've never shown that one. It's probably not as... aside from people who are Stanley Kubrick fans and Kirk Douglas fans, it's not as well known as some of his other films.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe
good, but
it ought
a good
to be.
Picture.
Maybe it ought to be because it's a great anti-war movie based on an actual incident that happened in World War One. And anyway, the other movie I would like to—you've probably shown Casablanca.
Yes, Casablanca is like Gone with the Wind. It's a perennial.
Right.
It comes back every few years.
Do you know what geographical error there is in Casablanca?
Geographical error?
Yes, ma'am.
No, sir.
Geographical error. Bogey and Claude Rains, who stole it in that movie as Captain Renault, they're sitting outside the Rick's Cafe. And why did you come to Casablanca, Rick? Well, I came for the waters. Well, Casablanca is in the desert. Well, I was misinformed. Well, Casablanca isn't. Now, did they do that on purpose? I don't know.
I don't know.
anyway, oh, by the way, you mentioned Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
You know what the name of his speedboat was? Here's another trivia. He had a speedboat. And the name of the speedboat, this is true, I've got a book that tells it, Damfino, D-A-M-F-I-N-O.
What am I? Do I get the joke? What is it, Rich?
No, that was the name of his speedboat. There's no joke.
Damfino.
Oh, don't.
Damfino.
Okay. All right.
Buster was some.
All right,
else,
Jerry.
I got to tell you, thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Great program.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks a lot for calling. 614-292-8513. There's another book. I would imagine Double Indemnity is a perennial or at least a biennial favorite.
Yes, but it's been about 11, 12 years since we've run that. So we've, quote, rested it. But it's got great dialogue and a great performance.
Well, to jog everybody's memory, let's hear a cut from it right now.
There's a speed limit in this state, Mr. Neff. 45 miles an hour.
How fast was I going, officer?
I'd say around 90.
Suppose you get down off your motorcycle and give me a ticket.
Suppose I let you off with a warning this time.
Suppose it doesn't take.
Suppose I have to whack you over the knuckles.
Suppose I bust out crying and put my head in your shoulder.
Suppose you try putting it on my husband's shoulder.
That tears it.
Oh, boy. Barbara Stanwyck and...
Fred McMurray.
Fred McMurray. I always think of My Three Sons. Yeah, Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray. And wonderful. The dialogue in that movie is absolutely fantastic. People love it. Rich?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we do great with that. And like Lance said, we haven't had that for like 11 years. So we're excited and we expect big crowds for that one.
See, Clark, how do you decide what pieces you're going to play before and after the performance?
Oh, I've got some criteria that I go through for each one. If it happens to be a musical, like My Fair Lady coming up or something, the choices are obvious. And then for additional music when that you need for the overture, I'll go with All Lerner and Lowe. On a straight picture, it will typically involve whatever music is in the picture, if I can find any of that, and perhaps tunes that are based on some of the stars, if there's a well-known star in it that has some particular pieces that they're famous for being involved with. And then beyond that, it will be the year that the picture came out. What was the most popular music in the year or two surrounding the release date?
You really have fun with this.
I really do, and it puts a lot of time, takes a lot of time to put all that together, but it really is fun. I enjoy doing it, and I hope everybody enjoys hearing what happens, too. I try to, as they did in the day that they did this kind of thing regularly, to tie the musical experience in with what's going on the screen. So actually, when you think about it, when the music starts for the overture, aside from the quick announcements just before the picture begins, and I play into the picture, the music never stops. We go right to the picture, the organ picks up the intermission, plays through that, right into the second half, and picks up the picture at the end. So it's a nonstop experience, and that's what those big cinema palaces were about back in those days. It was all showmanship and curtains and lights and sights and the organ and the music.
Well, I love how, you know, the cinema palace, you know, they call them cineplexes now or what, multiplexes and everything, but nothing sounds as good as a cinema palace.
Well, and they really were palaces. I mean, there are very few cineplexes that look like the Ohio.
Exactly. Yeah. I would venture to guess none. allsides at WOSU.org if you'd like to email us. And we have an email now from Kim. She says, I love, love, love. All uppercase. The summer movie series. I get a strip of 10 tickets every year. It is always a pleasure to find someone that has never been to the Ohio Theater and take them for a summer movie there. I already have a newbie lined up for Pretty Woman. Thanks, Kappa. We have another email from a listener. Has Kappa ever shown the early 3D movies of the 1970s and 80s like House of Wax or Shangri-La?
Well, the one of the first 3D movies actually had its first test engagement at the Ohio, Kiss Me Kate, in 1953. It is somewhat complicated, though, to do those sorts of 3D films because in the case of Kiss Me Kate, you have to have something where you have an interlock between two projectors, and some of the equipment's not available these days. And there's also a problem with 3D if you're not sitting in quite the center of the theater looking at the film, that the effect isn't as good.
Okay.
But it was something that was tried at the Ohio back in the 50s.
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call and have a suggestion, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Clark Wilson, the organ is special. Tell us about the organ. I love how it kind of floats up from the basement there.
Well, the organ was a large example of a typical theater organ of the time, with the console down in the orchestra pit on an elevator, so that you had maximum impact when it was your turn to do your act, so to speak, and you hit that up button and came up out of nowhere in the spotlight. And I think that's part of the thrill, as you hear that music start and then that big white console comes majestically up into the spotlight. The organ is, of course, for the people who have been there and heard it, very different from a typical church organ in that it's got all of the bells and the whistles, literally, that you would find in the orchestra, all the different sound effects, marimbas, xylophones, snare drums, all the traps, everything. And it was all there in the pipe organ in those days, so you could provide the right sound effects and the right score for a silent picture. And that's aside from several thousand pipes that are upstairs in the organ lofts.
614-292-8513. Gene, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I have seen Pretty Woman, I don't know how many times on television. Mm-hmm. I just watch it. And all the movies that you have talked about, I've seen them. I'm quite a bit older. But the one movie that comes to mind is the one called Syncopation. It's about... And I know there are a lot of jazz enthusiasts in Columbus.
Is this the early 40s movie?
Yes. Have you seen it?
No. It shows up, I think, or may show up, most likely to show up on Turner Classic Movies, perhaps.
I've never seen it on Turner Classic Movies. In fact, I think I looked it up one time at the library before I got a computer. But it just shows the origin of jazz, gospel, blues, how it originated with the drums, came to New Orleans, moved up the Mississippi River, moved to the West Coast, and the West Coast jazz evolved, East Coast jazz. The most it's a great movie, and there's a little love story to it. It isn't a documentary.
There has to be a love story to it.
Oh, yes. There's a love story. But it is so wonderful, and it's great. It's called Syncopation. Have you ever seen it?
I have not, but I've heard of it before. But, you know, Gene, we're going to move on. We got a few more suggestions. Okay. But thanks for listening to the show, and thanks for your call.
Well, what about that movie? You think you can get it?
Oh, we will definitely look into it.
Okay, super. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That would be a fun one to play, too. The musical possibilities would be endless.
I just wanted to see. It happened one night. You have a Fright Night double feature, Frankenstein and from 1931 and The Wolfman from 1941. You have Singing in the Rain from 1952, Rio Bravo from 1959, John Wayne flick there. You have Chick Flick Friday, again, of course, Pretty Woman, and also, well, I guess you have another Chick Flick Friday, don't you?
Yeah, How Stella Got Her Groove Back.
How Stella Got Her Groove Back. You have the Cartoon Capers, Some Like It Hot for the... Marilyn Monroe fans out there, the Goonies, the Buster Keatons. We're running out of time now. I'm sorry I couldn't get to all the emails and all the calls, but you can go to WOSU.org/allsides and get to the link to Kappa from there, or just go to Kappa if you can find it yourself, and check out their schedule. It starts this weekend.
It starts tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So what a way to start the weekend. There's the Arts Festival and the Kappa Film Series. Thanks for being on the show, Rich Corsi, Kappa Director of Programming.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it. And also, Lance Carwile, you're a wonderful series consultant, and I appreciate you staying on the show with us today.
Thank you.
And Clark Wilson, I can't wait to hear you play again.
My pleasure, and I can't wait to be there.
Okay. Take care, and have a great day. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.